Yeah.
So Steve, I've had enough.
Of what?
I just I would say everything, and that sounds flippant, but I actually I'm done with everything.
Wow.
Over the past week, I have practiced an actual work schedule for the first time in my life. So for the past 5 days, I actually worked, what does it work out to? 25 hours that week, last week. And that's the first time I've ever done that in my life. Everything would always just be this blur of, if I had free time, I'd hop on the computer to do something or be proactive, hop on the phone to do something proactive. So it's maybe not as much like, quote unquote, like actual work, but like stuff revolving around work, or like making the excuse that like it's for work that I'm doing this, or I'm watching this, or I'm following up on this. And I find you make so many excuses as to say like, no, this isn't my work because I'm not literally in front of my computer. I'm not whatever. And I've been going through a bunch of mental health discoveries, and I realized that this isn't necessarily something which is like a diagnosis or whatever. This is perhaps like work overwhelm. I'm experiencing a lot of fallout from work overload. And I'm a dude who literally sits on a podcast where I brag about I've been doing this so long and I have it together and I'm successful and all of the rest. But the truth is, I really realized that I had no control over my work, and it completely tainted every single thing in my life, because there was this feeling of, what do I have to do next? Like I owe something to someone in order to like continue this YouTube life, or this life which has other businesses, but all of them are kind of like based upon the popularity of our YouTube channel, and just like that particular mindset. And it was crazy because I came across an old Wheezy Waiter video from a couple of years ago, actually. It was called "I Burned Out, Then I Got Over It, and Here's Why I'll Never Burn Out Again." And I found it came at like a really good time, because I have just come off the most amazing week where I actually felt like I had an understanding of what work time was and what it felt like to like have off time that was truly off time.
So what does this mean? Did you schedule your work and all of your tasks, or how did this play out?
So I started off with like the most basic thing I could think of, which was just like a schedule for myself. Because I realized I would wake up, I would grab my phone, and then whatever was the top message or whatever the top email was, that's the thing I would focus on next. And then I would just follow a random breadcrumb trail to wherever the day
ended. That's the way I work.
Yeah. Right? And you kind of feel like you move through the day with just always being reactive to things, as opposed to kind of feeling proactive. When I work out, I feel proactive, but it feels like such a forced period of time, which is deliberately different from what I guess what my normal life was feeling like, and still does certainly feel like, absolutely. This anxiety of like, if I have time to lean, I have time to clean type of thing. But it's like, it's not just that. It's not doing it in the garden. It's not doing it in a healthy way. It's this unhealthy, like, I want to keep doing this because I don't know. I don't know anything different. For 10 years, it's been like, that's what the goal has been. And the reason why I brought up the Wheezy Waiter video is because he actually talks about how like your goals kind of change and what you want changes, and your purpose and things change and whatnot. And I think when you kind of get away from like wanting to make money from something, and then just you appreciate your time as a commodity, and it's like, wow, how will I do that? So that's exactly what got me to thinking. It's like, okay, I have a time. I have 24 hours a day. I want to sleep a certain amount. So when I wake up now between 8 and 10, I do pure self-care stuff. Shower, go for a walk, meditate, work out. Whatever, even just read the paper, just go outside and garden, like whatever, free time to kind of like do whatever would make me feel good about myself. Then from 10 till 3, it's work time. I don't need to take a lunch because I fast. So I can usually take like 5 dedicated hours. And now instead of working on like 3 different companies, I just work on one company, our digital production company. So the YouTube channel and our website. And so as much as I like blame YouTube for getting me into this mindset, I'm still doing the YouTube work, but I'm just kind of putting it in a container, if you will. And then from 3 to 5, because we have a little one and school pickup and all of that is still a thing, 3 to 5 is the time that I just do that family time or like activity or housework or just all of that kind of stuff. And then 5 to 10 is either like family time and we're doing stuff together, or we can just be doing quiet time or whatever.
What do you do for dinner? Do you guys both cook or?
Melissa does, when we do cook, Melissa does the majority of the cooking. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of just like warm-up dinner, not like TV dinners, but like, yeah. You know, whatever. We warm a couple things up. So it's not like really like a formal like, hey, da-da-da. We kind of sometimes have light dinners. I also fast. So our like the dinner time is, we try to do the around the table, even if we're not all eating. Mm-hmm. So like it's a time that we all come together. And I think now with this new kind of schedule, at least for me, we'll probably be able to do that. A lot more, simply because that was never the case. If it was like the evening and it was whatever, just before dinner time, I would be downstairs working until Melissa was like dinner, and then I'd go up and we'd sit and da da da. And then as soon as it was done, I would clean up and then I would come back downstairs and get right back to that great idea that I was doing, thinking it wasn't work because it was like, no, it's just a fun idea and I'm just being creative. And then from 10 on, I have a new bedtime, which is 11 o'clock, which is very early for me, but I've also found that helps.
Do you find it hard to get to sleep at a new, earlier time?
No, because I actually find I'm quite tired. Because again, I find it ends up helping me qualify my time. Like it allows me to look at my day and be a lot more like, yes, between those hours I was doing this, as opposed to looking back at the day and like just like doing a crash landing in the bed and being like, oh, I was just excited. And I realized that my words when people were like, how's things? I'm like, where do I even start? What do I tell you that I do? I don't know. I'm doing a million things right now. Because it was just like always like go, go, go. It's nice to have. And this might sound really crazy for a lot of, it probably sounds really crazy for a lot of people. But like between 10 and 3, now I know that's the time that I can turn that on and engage it and do whatever I need to do with it. And then being able to now turn that off and be like, yeah, that's different. That's separate.
And are you scheduling individual daily tasks, or you just have, this is the window of time when I do work?
So I'm a guy who's going from no schedule, no calendars, no real control over that, to trying to do the simplest thing, which is just free up the categories. And then
that's
know that
good to start right? Small like
as opposed to like between 5 and 5:30 you're gardening and then go to the, and that's what I didn't want. I just wanted the time to be, and that's it. It's training my mindset from always being, I have some free time, let's go work because I can make some money or I can continue to whatever. I can feed whatever it was that I was getting out of the work. And just seeing like, wow, there's a different part of me. I can literally operate at a different cadence and like with different thoughts and whatnot. And it's mind blowing. I'm so glad I found this video from Craig from a few years ago, because he kind of like, I know there's a whole bunch of other mental stuff going on with me right now, but this is 100% like burnout. I was pushing myself to do a bunch of work. I knew I was like, oh, no, I'll be able to handle it because I've been doing this for so long. And I just crashed.
Yeah, I think it does help to have at least some. I've been on a schedule similar to that, whereas my day is pretty much done at 5. And I'm done with that. And I'm the one, I cook dinner every night. And so that kind of takes us up to a time when then I can sit down, I'll read for a while, I'll watch some TV, and then I'm in bed by 10. And on, you know, weekends I might stay up a little later if we're watching a movie or something. But I have found, and we've talked about this before, the value of sleep. That is really the third pillar to health. It's diet, exercise, and sleep. And sleep is so important. If you talk to like strength training coaches and bodybuilders and all of these people, they will tell you that they get the most gains when they get on a regular sleep schedule. It's that important for your body.
I remember hearing that Cristiano Ronaldo sleeps like a whole bunch, and he has like naps throughout the day and whatnot because he understands like the regenerative and restorative power of sleep. It's just been recently that we've really kind of understood how important something is that we don't really take into consideration.
But you used to hear people sometimes bragging, well, I only need a few hours of sleep a night and then I'm back at work. I'm like, no, you're not. You're either you're going to crash and die, or you're just lying about that because it somehow makes you sound like some sort of, you know, beast. I can just take on the world.
Well, that's kind of like, that was my whole point about, like, it was just like that feeling 24/7. Like this, I think the downside of the hustle culture is it's like the grind all day, but it's like that isn't something to be admired and working towards, because you need 8 hours. Well, actually, how many hours do you need of sleep? Do you know what the official?
Well, I think they generally say between 7.5 and 8.5, 9, something like that. So I'm at 10, I'm up at 5:30. I got, how many hours would that be? 7.5, I guess. So yeah, it's about right.
Seven to nine hours, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention.
And what I found is when I started sleeping on a regular schedule is I didn't get sleepy during the day. It used to be, I would be just tired. And sometimes I'd feel like I need a nap. And it used to be also that a nap would sometimes lead to like an hour long nap. And that's not really a nap. That's just sleeping. You're just trying to catch up on sleep, where there is a value to like these 10, 15 minute power naps. You've heard of those.
Yes.
And I've done that before, but anymore, I just don't really require that during the day because I could usually get a good night's sleep. Sometimes I wake up during the night, and that is frustrating, especially if I start thinking about work and the things I want to do. But I would like to get on to having my tasks more delineated through the day, though, because I'm kind of like you're describing, is that I know that this is my work period, but I bounce around from all these different things that I'm interested in doing. And a lot of these things I probably shouldn't be wasting time on, but I do because they're fascinating me or whatever. Like right now I'm writing my newsletter for this month. And then after spending hours on this letter, I just decided it's not going anywhere. I got to ditch it. I got to start over, which was real frustrating. And I think, how can I salvage this? That's a frustrating thing, is when you spend a lot of time on something and you finally have to come to the realization that it's like, this isn't going to work. This is not going to work. And then having to redo it. I've got somebody I'm interviewing on my podcast, a film director who I'm really looking forward to. And I really want to get this right. So I'm doing some research into her. And it's just all these things that, and I'll do a few minutes on one and then, I should do these email. I remember there was a thing. And it just, I know that if I would focus on one thing at a time, it would be more efficient.
And the rub is, using that time in a somewhat irresponsible manner is what got you here in the first place. Like, it's almost like you're a victim of the success of like doing something which was kind of off the wall, but like built success off of it. So now you have not a track record, but like you have a history of doing something like that. So it calls into question, like, when I'm doing that stuff and it's like, yeah, this is the stuff that I shouldn't be doing because I should be doing whatever. It's like, but this is the kind of stuff that I was doing, which allowed me to be more creative or to be more open and to try things that I normally wouldn't try.
Well, when I first started YouTube, it was pretty simple. I needed to make a video and I needed to publish the video. Those were basically my only two work tasks: make a woodworking project, film it, and then edit it. And that was it. And then as I started adding all this other stuff that interests me, then those started taking up more time that I wasn't spending that out in my shop doing what I think I should be doing. Now, when I wake up in the morning, like I'm working on a project right now, and when I wake up in the morning, it's exciting and I get out of bed really easily knowing that, oh yeah, I got this project. I'm right at this stage of it. This is really fun. And I can't wait to get back and work on that thing.
To go back to Craig's videos, he kind of talks about that, and he talks about the fact that he now accepts that what he does is a job, and maybe something that started as a vanity piece. Things, the purpose of things change. He brought up the example of like the red pill, blue pill. To think like there's only two options ever available to you is, you know, a bit of a misnomer, because obviously at all times there's millions of options available to any one particular person. And he more so said that like he understands that producing that video and doing that process turned from something that he got fulfillment from because of whatever reason 10 years ago, and now it is something different, and now he has to see it as like, well, now this is the way I make money, this is the way other people make money, so like there's now a responsibility, and there's a whole group of people who really enjoy this particular thing which I do. And as much as it started from like this beautiful place, now I need to respect that it's like more than that, and I need to really separate it. And that's what ended up happening with me, where it's just like I literally couldn't have seen that up to about a couple of weeks ago, where I was like, wow, I'm so enmeshed with everything that I do that it's hard to define who I am and put it in a schedule. Because it feels like part of this is just me, but you have to look at it as like, no, now it is a business and it needs to operate in that way.
Are you finding it difficult on those times when you are, you know, not supposed to be at work? Are you finding it difficult to kind of stay away from looking at that email and doing the work stuff?
It was difficult for the first couple of days, but then it became very easy, and it actually quickly became like I was happy to be like, great, now let's get back to that, just mowing the lawn and worrying about mowing the lawn, not worrying about
work. Do you get notifications on your phone for work related stuff, email and whatnot?
Not anymore. Like obviously I keep a lifeline, but like I don't pay attention to the like the group WhatsApp conversations anymore, and that was one thing I always did. Also, just at all hours,
what about,
sharing
say,
with the team.
Say your accountant or somebody sends you an email, and it you see that notification come up. Are you going to answer it, or are you going to just say nope, wait until work?
And
time?
Now I understand. Like, and I really just, and I just did. Like, I can't. I guess I'm stupid. Perhaps I know I'm stupid, but I think I'm smarter than a stupid person. But clearly, I'm not, because like I never thought that it was like no. At 10 o'clock tomorrow is when I'll deal with that. And that helps put it in a different part of my brain, which I guess I just hadn't been accessing before.
And that's the way humans have worked at their jobs for a long time. You would come home and you would put all that stuff aside. And then if somebody contacted you or had a work-related thing, you'd be like, well, okay, it's something I can deal with in the morning when I get to the office.
Yeah. But then in the 90s, you got a BlackBerry. And then in the early 2000s, it's like electronic mail. Now the client can just email you directly. And now you can get your email on your phone, and now you can like whatever. And then it just like the culture shifted where it was like, now it's just your life. What do you do? Yeah. You make, do you make, do you create? What do you do? Are you doing something right now? And it just kind of feels like we've really gotten away from the like punching out, hanging up the old work helmet and work boots, and like Mr. Rogers used to do at the end, right? Where you'd literally put on a different vest.
The day was done.
Right, the day is done.
Do you find that when you're in your work hours that you have to justify what you're doing now?
No.
Or is there times when you can just relax and think it's okay?
Yeah, because now I'm just working on, like I used to work on like the product stuff, and then I'd work on the thing, and then I'd work on a personal thing, and I'd work on like, so like, because there was no defined anything, everything was everything at all the time. Yeah. So now when I do have to sit down and work, it's like, great, I need to make these thumbnails, I need to go through and change some meta information over here, I need to like, it's all YouTube nerdy stuff, which I enjoy doing. But A, which fell by the wayside when I was doing a million other things. So you end up like not being able to pay attention to the thing that you actually want to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. And now when I'm working on it, it's like I don't get distracted by the accountant's email or whatnot, because I know during this time what I'm actually working on, as opposed to what I worked so hard through the first half of my life to get to the point where I could wake up and be like, I want to wake up and do anything I want to do. That was literally my north, like that was my goal in life, just to wake up, not have a boss, not have a thing, not have a someone telling me what to do, no responsibility at all, and just be a quirky guy who is successful and da da da. It does not exist. Well, not that it doesn't exist. I clearly existed. It's you don't realize how unhealthy that is until you step back, and it's like, I'm a great dad. I have time for, like, I tried my best in all the spaces that I do, but like I wasn't actually there. All of those spaces were just placeholders until I could get back to this weird, it's like a pull towards, oh, I need to do this, I need to make something, people are waiting.
Well, and it's hard because I've been working at my own business since 1997. So it's, you know, a long time I've been doing this, but there's always that fear of like, there's no safety net for you when you own your own, when you run your own business, you feel like every minute you better devote to that, because if you slack off,
yeah,
it's all going to come crumbling down, and then you may have to actually go get a day job.
Yeah, yeah, and you'll be seen as
and
a
I don't
failure.
Think I could do that. Yeah. I don't think I'd know how to apply for a job anymore. You know, I mean, it's been so long. I don't think I could do that.
Let alone the shame associated with like, I'm going to go and try something, and then failing at it is.
Oh, exactly.
So of course you're going to push yourself to the brink of unhealthy. Oh, I'm going to sleep 4 hours a night, and then I'm going to wake up super early. I'm going to do a quick power workout, and then I'm going to do a power shake, and then I'm going to do a power work hour, and then I do a power, like, and everything's like this, like everything needs to be as into, and just this weird, for those who are listening, I keep touching my shoulders because I always felt it in my shoulders. I'd be doing this podcast and just in the back of my head, I'm like, at the end of this, I have an hour, and then I need to launch that video, and then I need to put it on Twitter, and then hopefully this video is a good video because I have that just nonstop. So.
What's the solution for somebody who's just starting a business? Or I guess what would be your advice to, like, your words of wisdom? Because when they start a business, they're going to want to give it their all.
Yeah, accept failure. Know that you're going to do stuff and it's not going to work out and you're going to feel like a whatever. And then that's either going to prompt you to go on Instagram and feel bad because someone else is making a whole bunch more money than you. And you feel like that somehow has to do with the amount of work that they're putting in. And then you go and double down and be like, all right, well, I'm inspired. I'm going to go do it myself. So you just keep doubling down because you don't accept your failures. You try to push your failures aside and like mount a whole bunch of successes on top of them. So just like being good with like the ups and the everyone cools off from being hot. It's about if you can handle being cold or not.
Do you know what's made me happy this week? I got into a retro mode on YouTube. I watched... First, it started because I watched that. Remember that Tiny Dancer video
a
couple years ago? The girl who was trying to sing. I thought it was the funniest thing ever. I want to watch that. And it just made me laugh again. She does that so well. But then I got to thinking about Dance Like Nobody's Watching. Remember that?
Yeah.
So that thing is 10 years old now. That was 10 years ago that was posted. And I watched it. I love that video because it's the one where it's kind of spawned a number of these types of videos, but she's in the airport at the carousel, the luggage carousel. And she has, it's so old, she's got like wired, you know, earbuds to her phone, you know? And so she just starts dancing, and it must've been a crazy sight for the people there. And it's kind of fun to watch them because there's this girl just dancing, but they don't hear the music, but you know, she does and we do. And it was just so cool. But as I was watching that, I'm like, wow, today, if she did that, it would just be so annoying because you just think, oh shit, it's another TikTok or influencer or somebody just trying to do what they do in front of everybody. I'm sure somebody standing there would have turned to her and said, stop it, knock it off. Whereas 10 years ago, it was just such a cool thing.
And like it captured everybody's, I was thinking about the Charlie Bit My Finger video or the Evolution of Dance video with and that was like 15, probably even more
earlier.
And just to think that so many people like knew that particular thing or that short video, hundreds of millions, if not maybe borderline billions of views on this stuff. And it would just get lost in the mix today in like all of the noise of like whatever. It'd be some random TikTok that got 32 views. Yeah. If you were to do any of the stuff that, you know, was mildly viral from like 5 or 10 years ago.
So common. And I don't know, it might just be a little bit more common, you know, in San Francisco and other larger cities to see TikTokers in the wild doing their thing. And it's become so it's just annoying. I see them out there and they're putting on this really exaggerated personality. I know that's not really them because you can see the other half when they stop recording and then they're just kind of like normal people again. But every time I see that now, I just think, oh, stop. It's just nobody wants to see this. It's like a, it's like public displays of affection or something almost. Like, please don't.
Or the remember flash mobs? A bunch of people would start dancing in a subway. And then flash mobs didn't become a thing because they became annoying. And isn't it funny how when you talk about TikTokers, you like literally refer to them as a group?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
you can do that for YouTubers, but it's much more disingenuous if you were to do that for YouTubers. There's like some things which are kind of cliche YouTubers, but like TikTokers just TikTokers. It's that dance. It's short, irrelevant, like whatever it is, like just visual, you know, porn or whatever it's called. It's not visual porn. I'm sure there is visual
that
porn.
That would be literal.
It's a different platform.
I'm pretty convinced, though, that our phones are really listening to us. I think we talked about this before, how we might be getting ads based on what we're talking about.
Yep.
We were at, here's another retro thing. We were at a bookstore the other day.
A what?
And remember those?
Oh, my God.
But there was, I was looking at a book because I'm still doing my monthly book read. And so I've been very interested in getting this book, Crying in H Mart. It's Michelle Zauner. Mm-hmm. She goes by Japanese Breakfast. She's a pop star and she's Korean. And this is the story of her and her mother getting cancer and dying. And it's a huge bestseller. They're going to be making it into a movie and all this. And so I thought, I really want to read this book. It just sounds so good. And I was thumbing through it and my wife was there and she's like, oh, what are you looking at? And I said, oh, this is Crying in H Mart. This is Michelle Zauner from Japanese Breakfast. And just talking about it a little bit. And so she didn't know. I don't think even she knew who Japanese Breakfast was. And so we get home and she's playing like Candy Crush or whatever game she plays. And an ad came up for that book, Crying in H Mart. That cannot be a coincidence. I mean, it could be a coincidence, but it's a really questionable coincidence if it is.
That's a really, I mean, how many books could...
Yeah.
I think the phone's listening to you. I know that my phone's listening to me because it's a Google phone. And whenever I... put something in the calendar with people's names and I've tagged all of the people in my photos. I don't know if I talked about this or not, but like all of the people in my photo, you can tag them. And then when another picture comes up there, whatever. And I notice when I have like a play date or something with some of Riley's friends and we actually put it in the calendar, in the Google calendar, we notice that the people who are coming over on the play dates, those pictures come up on our Google displays on those days. Hmm. And at first I was like, it just kind of seems to be like, that's funny how it that's a coincidence. And then I really noticed, it was like, oh my gosh, it keeps pulling, like it sees that's like, you know, Ryan's coming over for a play date. And it's like all of a sudden that morning, bunch of pictures of Ryan from the last play date or like whatever that is. So I was like, wait a minute, Google. I don't mind this because, like, that's kind of cool.
I know, exactly. That's the way I am.
Like, I'm not complaining, and I appreciate that it's, like, it's going to happen. And so long as you're not, so long as you're using it for that purpose, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, some of the things that Google does is real handy. I got to admit. Here's one that I notice is that I do the New York Times crossword puzzle every morning. And when I'm done with it, I like to go to this blog that I've been reading for 20 years, probably. It's Rex Parker. He does a daily blog about the New York Times crossword puzzle and talks about each day the puzzle and what was good about it and what he didn't like about it. And it is very interesting. But I noticed that when I'm done with the, because I don't have bookmarks or anything, I just like Google everything I want to do. But I notice when I'm done with a puzzle and I just hit the search and Rex Parker will be the first thing up there. Because usually I have to like type in a couple of letters and then, oh, okay, here's what you're looking for. But it's like knows, okay, here's your pattern. You do the puzzle in the morning and then you come directly to this is your first search of the morning. And that's probably just, maybe that's all it is, just the first search of the morning. But
I don't think so, actually, because one of the things that I've noticed is when I'm on Reddit, If I'm using the Reddit app, I don't use Twitter much anymore, so it's really only Reddit. And I end up tapping through on a news story about whoever it may be, whatever, just some Gordon Lightfoot, the Canadian icon singer.
Folk superstar from the 70s.
I don't know why I brought Gordon Lightfoot up, but like it was, but that's how random it is. It's a random article about whatever. And I will go to Google right after that. So I will go from that article. Yeah. I will swipe up. I will tap on Chrome. I'll go into a search field. I will type in G. It will always give me Gordon Lightfoot. 100%.
It worked.
So it worked. No, and that's handy. That's great because it shouldn't be, you know, George Bush. And then I have to type in a whole. So that's it working well for me. I just don't like it. When it's like you still have the news feed on your phone, because like when you swipe all the way over, there's that news feed.
Yeah.
Because then it just takes liberties with that. Like that.
Yeah,
then it's
the news feed becomes annoying too, because the news feed is just my own echo chamber. It's basically just the same stuff. It's not feeding me anything interesting or new that I'm not expecting. So I have to kind of, if I want to do that, I have to kind of curate it and tell it, no, I'm no longer interested in this sort of article.
Right. And, or I get Gordon Lightfoot articles after that. And it's like, please understand the difference between me looking for some information, like in some context. And like,
I can see you're highly interested in Gordon Lightfoot.
We've added all of Gordon Lightfoot's albums to your shopping cart in the Vita. See, and that's what I didn't like about the Amazon thing, right? Amazon, those Alexas went straight out the door as soon as that one time that they were like, oh, did you know there was also a promotion on some stuff, and I unplugged it and never again. And Google thankfully hasn't taken that on. But I don't know. I'm still very torn about that particular
subject.
Well,
I think that the Google, I think these home devices, though, are kind of an interim product until we hit more of an AI kind of solution, because they're still pretty clunky with all the way you interact with it. But honestly, I've been using ChatGPT as a search lately a lot more than Google. And when I'm just kind of researching something or just doing some, I was writing an article about kind of my experience with my shop and how the difference between accuracy and precision and speed and efficiency. And so I thought, well, I should probably like Google this, get more kind of insight into these terms and how they relate to woodworking and how I can express this. And Google gives you a list of links and then you have to go to maybe an article and read that article relating to what you're talking about. And it's still, maybe you might have questions. Well, that's sort of what I'm thinking about, but not really. So I've just started going to ChatGPT, and I'll say, you know, I'll maybe start with describe the difference between precision and accuracy. Okay, and it gives you a lengthy thing. And then you don't have to keep restating it. You can just have a natural conversation with it. I'm like, okay, now give me two examples as that relates to woodworking. Sure enough, they'll give you that. And then I can say, well, that's sort of what I'm looking for, but can you redefine it a little bit differently this way? And it becomes an actual conversation with search in a way. And I think that this is why it's going to revolutionize the way we search for things. And I think also that it's not going to completely replace link-based searching. I don't even know if that's what you call it, but like what Google does now, because those have their place. I'm certainly going to use that for other types of searches, but for really researching something, this is a pretty handy tool, I got to say.
I don't know. Won't we just move away from all kind of like keyboard entry? Like, won't everything just kind of become a voice? It's how they did
it
on.
Will.
It's how they did it on Star Trek, right? They just talked to the computer.
Computer, T.L. Gray, hot.
Right.
And you know, shouldn't that computer know what he wants?
See, all of that AI, and he has to stipulate that it's a hot.
He always has to say T, Earl Gray, and hot.
Like, but who asked for a cold Earl Grey? Why would he even have to say that?
I know. And why wouldn't, see, if it was today, the computer would be like, all right, already, I get what you want. I'm just going to deliver it for you. So anyways, that form of AI, I'm starting to actually embrace a little bit. I don't see, I think, so my kind of right at this moment thought about AI, and these are kind of like thoughts that are changing daily, it seems like, on AI, is that there are so many different types of AI for different purposes that I think to talk about AI in general is probably disingenuous. You really need to like focus on certain things. It's like saying, you know, talking about movies in general when you really want to talk about a specific movie or a specific genre or something.
And it's hard to even wrap your head around what like AI means. Artificial, like what does that look like? Because in my head, I always think of like, oh, it's an electronic brain in a glass of fluid or something like that. Like, but it's hard to like be like, oh, what is it? You know, what's this? Oh, have you checked out AI? Did you know AI? Chat GPT? And it's just like these words that people think they kind of know. But is the ultimate thought in people's heads or my head supposed to be like, oh, it's like we're building a human, or like what, like actually what is artificial intelligence? What does that mean? And how do, like, how am I going to live in a world where this is like a new thing? Because to your point, like, why would I have to type in on a keyboard like a, you know, like a cave person into a search engine and then get a whole bunch of links and then have to kind of go, versus like you said, like you can keep defining it and then it's going to get to know how you ask things and what you expect after a few trainings. And that's probably the biggest thing.
And that's what I like about it, is while you're in a session with ChatGPT, it kind of knows who you are and it remembers the whole conversation, and you can go back to previous points that you've made with it and it'll bring it up. And it is really a very natural conversation. So I think that this is all a natural evolution. And I think it's for the most part, I'd like to remain optimistic about it all. I think there's going to be definitely a lot of bad parts to it, especially they've got to sort out the whole business with art. And Adobe just came out with their own AI. It's like everybody now, it's almost become a marketing buzzword now. You know, we have AI refrigerator or something, you know. I mean, it's no doubt that's going to happen. And so I don't even know, the AI one, AI Adobe product, I think is just going to generate images. So are they willing to throw Photoshop out, you know, out into the wild, or are they just two complementary products? I don't know.
Does Photoshop hold the same stature that it did way back in the day when it was literally the only place that, remember, like people used to like, is that image Photoshop? Like now it's you like that
of
kind of associate.
They all are.
They all are. And it's not actually Photoshop. There's like an app built into my phone that I can circle a picture of myself and take all of the other crowd away or isolate myself like within a set. And for someone who also had a web design and graphic design company, started in 1999, I remember how long it used to take to do isolations or clipping pads.
Yeah, you remember clipping, making those pads around every
masks
hair.
And having to zoom in with the lasso, the magic lasso tool, and go cut
it. It could take hours.
Shadows and data. And to see that, like, Instagram offers these filters that'll just do it for you, or make your eyes big and buggy. Like, it's like, as soon as that started happening, I was like, wow, now anybody can do kind of anything. Everything becomes so much easier. It's so much easier to make a song or to make a painting or da, da, da. So I guess that leads me to my question, is like, where does that leave human intuition, or like the human intelligence, HI, let's talk about HI for a sec. Yeah. Where does that leave us with, like, do we wish to find a way to differentiate ourselves? Do we learn a different way of communicating so we can identify ourselves away from things which aren't organic creatures like ourselves?
It's hard to know. I think that, and of course you remember a lot of controversy with Photoshop, like you were alluding to, you know, when it first came out, the photographers, there were a lot of them who were like, no, that's just so not right. You can't be doing that. It's no longer, all you're doing is pushing a button, you know, and you've lost the art of photography. And now here we are, it's commonplace. We all accept it. And, you know, every photo you see is enhanced. It's run through Photoshop. Every movie you see has CGI in it, even though you don't realize it. You know, we think of like the CGI monsters that look horrible, but most CGI in movies is stuff you don't really even realize, you know, like leaves blowing and stuff that's just added for atmosphere. And so this has all just become incorporated into the art.
And it leaves the people who are like paint and canvas and or like, I don't know. I don't know where that leaves us organic.
I think it
cloak.
Leaves them in actually a better place.
If anything, I believe
because
so.
Because then you're showing this is a human created thing.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think we figured out what that's going to be, but I think there's going to be a thing that becomes uniquely human that will be a response to everybody getting sucked into the AI thing. I think most of the technology will just become commonplace. I think of, I don't know, 15 or 20 years ago when everybody went eco and green and added a green leaf to their logo and, and like had an environmental program and it was just the thing. And then everybody was like, well, now we have to, I'm green leaf cleaners. I'm a dry cleaner, but I'm an organic dry cleaner. And there was this whole movement towards like, talk about how green you are. I think we're probably going to see the same thing with AI where it's like all these companies are like, oh, look how smart all of our stuff is. And it just becomes less of a thing that we like point at and be like, whatever. And it just becomes, hopefully you expect a company to be green and you don't need to advertise it anymore. But, you know, I don't know if that's going to necessarily be the case or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I was reading an article about these AI girlfriends now that are basically, you know, you chat with them and they respond to you all the ways that I guess you want them to. And
okay, see, this is a good use of AI. This is a great use of AI. So I can have a...
Yeah, but you never have to meet real people anymore. And, you know, obviously the fear is, well, then that doesn't say much for the human race. But I'm kind of thinking, well, if you're a guy who likes to date real women, this man... You should hope that all those other guys are doing the AI business because it makes the playing field a little bit easier for you. Like, well, okay, you do your imaginary girlfriend. I'm going to go after what's actually out here.
Is it considered cheating if you cheat with an AI girlfriend?
That's a good question. Yeah, there's a lot of these kind of questions, you know.
Oh, my wife doesn't listen to this podcast. Clip that part out.
Have you ever been to this is just an off the wall question. We were in San Francisco. We went and saw a play last weekend, Clue, which was really funny. You know, the movie Clue.
Oh.
So there's a play version of it, which was real fun. It was fantastic. But the theater had this multi-gender restroom. Have you ever been in one of these?
I've seen them. And yes, I have been in an all gender.
So it's a little weird, huh? Because you go in there and there's urinals and stalls. Mm-hmm. And this one, I could tell that most of the people, it had a kind of weird vibe in there because, I mean, I get it. It's just bodily functions. We're all doing the same thing. We just want to go in there and pee and stuff. But it's weird standing at a urinal when women are walking behind you and washing their hands and then going into the stalls, and I get like stage fright. I'm like, well, now I can't pee. They're gonna be it's I don't know why, because it shouldn't be that way. We all just, who cares? We're just doing this thing that we all have to do. And yet I could tell there was just a weird vibe in there. Like everybody was like kind of afraid to look at anybody else and didn't say anything. It was weirdly quiet in there. And I don't know, the whole thing was just a very kind of uncomfortable experience. I hope that that's just me and I hope I get over that. Or I don't even know if this is the way things are going. I don't know.
My experience with an all-gendered bathroom was the same. It was kind of the same type where it was the stalls and then the urinals and then like a big, like, foot operated kind of like water fountain from when you were in elementary school. And we were at an art show. It was at a very large kind of like center for like trade shows and whatnot. So it was like a very large bathroom. And it had all genders, big sign on it. It said all gender bathroom. And then there was a little sign to the side that said women's bathroom. And there was a little arrow pointing. So therefore, if
those
you
were
want
your two options,
those were your two options. As you can see, as a man, you really only have one option.
Right. Yeah.
Just saying. But yeah, the women had the little for the people who are whatever. I think it's less of an issue of gender and more of an issue of we need to learn how to build bathrooms correctly. Because yeah. I go to the first restaurant that I remember that did it was a restaurant called The Keg. I don't know if you guys have The Keg. Anyways, it's a steakhouse up here in Canada. It's a very popular one, kind of nice high end, if you will. And they have just full on, you get a little toilet, you get a little small tiny sink, and you get a little thing to do your whatever, and a little mirror. And it's all in a little small space about the size of a bathroom stall. But instead of having like half inch gaps everywhere and a foot off of the ground, and like for a tall guy like me, yeah. you know my shoes and you can see my hair, so you know it's me. And then when you're sitting down, you have the embarrassing, like your pants around your ankles, and the only thing they're showing you is that. And there's it's messy, and people go in there and they flush the toilet with their wet, because it's a stall. It's literally like this barn door that opens and closes, and the lock sometimes never works, and it's rickety. Why can we not have bathrooms be a little room I go into and all of the stuff I need is right. there? And now it's actually quite commonplace, especially at restaurants, to have this where it's just like, just pick a door. Like, it doesn't matter mm-hmm. if you're a man or a woman because you're in there by yourself.
Oh, yeah. But there's
that's
only one
the thing.
Person
we don't
in
need.
There. Yeah.
Doesn't matter if it's a woman walking behind me or a dude walking behind me. When I'm doing whatever it is that I'm doing, I want a door which has a lock on it, and I don't want people yeah. seeing my feet or my head or hearing the noises.
Wouldn't this be the solution to have an all-gender restroom? Would just be eliminate urinals and just have all stalls?
Or just eliminate the gender part. Just call it a restroom.
Well, exactly. I think that would make sense. But I don't... I guess it's just the urinals that made me uncomfortable. Standing there with my back to the people behind me.
Right.
When I know that they're fairly close, you yeah. know, because they had to go wash their hands. It's a smallish bath. So they had like six urinals and they also the urinals without the partitions, which is also,
see?
It gives me stage fright. I can't do that very
well. Or the partitions like 4.5 feet tall for like the random person who would not yeah. be able to see past that.
I think just make... stalls, just do away with urinals.
Full stalls. And if you want to do that stall style, just full styles and a door that closes, like yeah. not a like the little gap in between.
Or the ones that don't latch because they're broken. Somebody's kicked them too many times. And so it's right? all, somebody goes to open the door. Oh, sorry.
And it separates the door and the gap gets even wider. So you yeah. literally can look right into people and just like looking in the thing. Stop.
Oh, here's another one is that we went to this art show a few days ago and they had old-fashioned gendered restrooms at Fort Mason there. So it was men's room, but they had one of these where it has all of the urinals. There must have been 10 urinals in this place. And every guy should know the etiquette. If you're yeah. going, there's 10 urinals, you get the one on the end. You start there, okay? And then the next guy comes in. Where does he go? He goes on the other end or somewhere in the middle. The guy came up and went right next to me.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing? How mm-hmm. do you not know this man code? How do you do this? How can you get through life like this?
Do you remember Flash games? Like Flash?
Yeah.
Like game, like it was a thing for many years on the internet where they're like short yeah. games. That was one of my favorite Flash games from, it was from Newgrounds or like one of those things that had all of the different games. And it was the urinal etiquette game and it showed a bathroom and it would just have random combinations and you'd have to pick which is the right urinal that you're supposed to go to that doesn't affect the guy code. And there was one option, which was you don't do anything because there's no safe urinals to go to. You just wait until a safe urinal.
Just wait.
Does yeah. open up because you don't go besides you just you don't
no
I actually I, this guy, this I don't even use it. Urinals I don't even use urinals
I try and, you know because I get if there are a lot of guys there I get real stage fright and I can't go so yeah. I have to I have like what do they call that? Like nervous bladder syndrome or
something. Yeah, no, I got that
shy
too.
Shy bladder. But so the worst though are if you go to like a sports arena, at least the older ones, where they had those big troughs.
Or some like, yeah, like a country bar or something like that would have like, it's just a hole in the ground and you pee in it. Jeez.
Oh, man.
Yeah, just urinals in general. Come on. Like really, just like.
Well, and then they have the ones, you've probably seen these. We have them all over the place here. They're probably mandated where they're the no flush urinals. So there's no water involved in them. You know, it's like, ooh, new technology to save water.
Oh.
They stink. Because they just, you need a little water, I think, to flush down there.
Yeah. And you know what? We just don't need urinals anymore. Maybe if we stopped wasting our time making something which was literally only good for 50% of the people to use it, regardless of what gender you are. I don't care what gender you are. If you need to use a urinal, I guarantee you can probably do the same thing in a toilet.
Do you know what the complaint is going to be if they switch to just all gender, but just have all stalls, which I'm up for. Just do stalls, toilets, that's fine.
And then a communal hand washing area.
Yeah, I don't mind that. And I don't mind going in with women in the bathroom. But the complaints are going to come from women because guys will dribble on the seats.
That's true. Well, we eliminate the seats. I don't know how that works, but the women can figure it out.
Yeah.
They can. They hover. My wife talks about the hover. They understand.
Which is really dumb. Countless studies have come out and say you don't need an ass gasket. There's nothing's going to happen. You just sit. Just sit like a normal person. You don't need to put the toilet paper around it or do anything. Nothing's going to happen. There's not going to be weird osmosis through your skin from sitting. The worst thing is actually just touching the door handle on the way out.
Many years ago, we contacted 3M because they have really high-end, I don't know what they're called. They're called like PT meters or something like that, which can gauge the amount of bacteria on surfaces. And they're incredibly expensive. They're like $30,000 kind of like meters or something like that. And we had an idea for a video to go around and just see how dirty surfaces were using this meter. And we're like, that's really cool. So we called up 3M. 3M was like, yeah, that's a kind of cool idea. So we went to the 3M office and they showed us how to use it, and I brought it home and I started thinking about what are the surfaces I should try. And then I went to a gas station and I did a gas handle, and I went to a mall and I did the mall entry handle, and I did a shopping cart, and I did all this stuff, and I had all these varying readings of like 627 molecules over here. Oh my goodness, the gas pump had 1100 and da da da. I took it and I rubbed it against the palm of my hand, and it registered 10 times the amount of bacteria on any of the stuff was just on my hand. I washed my hand. I did it again. It was still like 3 times the amount of bacteria on. And like, you have more bacteria right now in your mouth than you do, I guarantee you, that you need to worry about on some toilet seat, which is literally just going to touch the fleshy part of your bum.
They did this on Mythbusters a long time ago. They did a similar thing where they were testing various areas, like in the bathroom. And actually, your kitchen is filthier than your bathroom, is what they discovered.
Just all that meat,
bacteria, and and
protein.
But you know that those ass gaskets you see in some public stalls, those are an example of a product based purely on fear. They're selling it because it does nothing.
Yeah,
it does nothing.
Yeah. They started with the cart handle wipes at my local grocery store, and that was for COVID. Like, I got it for COVID, but they're doubling down on them. They really like them. It's like, come on, y'all! Just a little hand sanitizer for your hand will do the same thing. Or just,
hey, we finally got rid of our mask requirements for hospitals and doctors' offices. I guess this week, because I went to an eye doctor. Get my eyes checked yesterday and no mask. I was like, wow, this is crazy. It just seems like it's been forever. Because that was the last holdout, you know, was the medical establishment. So I don't know what it's like in other states, but here we are. So I think that's finally it.
Good. Thank
you. But you know, going to the eye doctor is always kind of, it's the only medical procedure that's kind of fun in a way, because they have like the cool equipment.
Yeah.
Nothing is going to be painful.
Yeah. Do you get the little puff of air in your eye?
Oh, so here's the thing is I went and they are testing out this new equipment that these researchers from UC Berkeley have invented, I guess. And so it's this device that eliminates, they won't have to dilate your eyes if you won't need that. And they don't have to do the puff of air. And get this machine, you look in it and it shows you like an image of, I think it's like a hot air balloon in a road or something, you know, and it's all blurry. And then you just wait and it goes zip. And in about 10 seconds, it's in sharp focus and it spits out an actual printed prescription. So you don't need to any longer do the, which is better, one or two, and all go through that. A doctor will literally be able give you your prescription in under a minute. Crazy.
I was going to say, when you go to the doctor and you have a skin condition, the doctor does the thing and then tells you what to do, and then you do that. And then when you go to the dentist and you get your teeth cleaned, the dentist cleans your teeth and does it, and then you do what the dentist tells you to. The eye doctor is the only place where you go, and it's like, okay, number one or number two? And it's like, this is up to me? And it's like, exactly. Because sometimes I'm like, I don't even know if, like,
I don't know.
There wasn't
maybe
a, there wasn't a
was
difference.
Too long.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Or like, maybe I blinked, and then I always feel so bad when they're like, can you read the bottom line? I'm like, maybe. And then I try to do the thing, and they never tell you if you're right or you're wrong.
No,
and you're
they
like,
don't.
Was I close? Was I way off? They're like, you did fine. I don't know what that means.
I usually try to get by with saying, yes, it's clear. And then it's clear. They'll usually just, I don't actually have to say the letters sometimes. But I've been going to the same eye doctor for a long time. But this thing, I told her, I said, well, man, this has got to be a game changer for you. I mean, I could imagine this machine showing up in basically like a kiosk where you could just do your own prescriptions. You don't need to actually see the eye doctor. This thing, you just look into it and it goes, here's your prescription. Here's what you got.
And then it knows your identity and it starts advertising some stuff to you on your phone.